This is John Gramstrand, and I'm a certified energy specialist for CHS Ag Services in Stephen, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Whitney Pittman, along with Randy Conan and Tyler Donaldson. North Carolina and South Dakota are the latest states to find bovine influenza A in dairy cattle. This makes 24 reports across 7 states since first being detected in Kansas and Texas dairy herds. Cow-to-cow transmission now seems possible. There has been one case of transmission to a human, which is only the second time ever recorded. Despite this, the risk of human transmission is still considered very low, and experts are reminding farmers to tighten biosecurity protocols. The virus does not survive the pasteurization process.
Farm Credit Administration Association and Examination Director Scott Donnelly says net farm income projections are a regression toward the average, not a doomsday scenario.
Net farm income recorded out at 2022 at $186 billion, forecast to drop to $116 billion in 2024. It's not a sky is falling scenario, it's really back to trend line. So, I mean, those that are disciplined, I think will be in good shape. I mean, let's face it, the farm balance sheet has a lot of liquidity on it. They have some wherewithal to accept some risk and to weather some storms here.
Donnelly thinks that risk management is more important when margins are tighter.
From the borrower side, I think the key component here, they need to know their cost of production before they can do any meaningful risk management activities other than revenue protection, crop insurance programs. But if they're going to get beyond that into any of the options out there, into the futures contracts, basis contracts, hedge-derived contracts, over-the-counter contracts, they need to know their cost of production so they can lock in those margins or limit the loss, whatever their risk management strategy is.
FDIC Supervisory Examiner Joe Kenigsman cautions farmers about rising interest rates and how bigger operations may face increasing risk over loans.
But then from a producer standpoint, $2 million line of credit is a pretty standard operating line of credit anymore. And if you have a, 500 basis points, we literally went from 4% to 10% on operating notes in a year's time, and just do the math on that. It's substantial, on a cost per head, if you're raising cattle, on a cost per acre, if you're raising crops. So I think that is going to be one of the biggest headwinds that I see is the interest rates and the longevity of it.
Kenigsman believes there are more tools available for managing risk than before.
I think we've gotten smarter. I think the producers have gotten smarter. I think the bankers have gotten smarter. Back when we were doing the family farm with my dad, there was no such thing as a cash flow or cash flow projection, and there was no hedging practices. There was none of that. That was all foreign, which then I always tell my bankers, I says, you're the ones that these producers look for. When my brother or another farmer comes in and you say yes to that loan, they're assuming that you're the expert in that field and that you're saying, okay, this probably going to be okay.
The Plant-Based Products Council held their second annual conference in Omaha, Nebraska this week. PBPC Executive Director James Glick says this conference highlights and builds relationships between farmers and processors in the industry. This year's event had a heavy focus on policy.
Very focused on the Farm Bill, on what that means to the grower community, but also what it means to those of us looking at building out biomanufacturing in rural America, the need for additional infrastructure and the need for continuing to promote these products as the industry continues to grow. And so I think that policy aspect is one that really came across some unity across the association around some of the Farm Bill interests, but also looking at kind of what the industry needs as we continue to grow. The national security angle here is one that a number of folks raised and talked about. This is happening around the world, and for the U.S. to be successful, it means we all need to kind of focus and kind of bring bright minds across the industry together, and that's exactly what the conference was about.
Glick says the organization wants to help increase national security by helping solve supply chain issues and produce more plant-based goods in the U.S.
Food security, paramount for national security, but I think many of us learned during the COVID experience, the supply chain has tentacles that touch all of our lives in many, many ways. And many of those products might be sourced from overseas today. Trade is a good thing, but when you can bring some of that manufacturing capacity home to the U.S. when it can be made on things that we grow very, very well here in this country, instead of being based by kind of fossil-based materials that have to be imported or processed elsewhere in the world. And so I think that's something that really resonates with a number of the folks in this sector, is that growing things in the U.S., manufacturing things in the U.S., there's some supply chain benefit as well.
The Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources has awarded more than $17 million in grant funding to 39 soil and water conservation districts. The grants are part of an effort to work with landowners to improve soil health. The grants will fund supplemental staffing to boost local expertise related to soil health initiatives.
Polaris has introduced its 2025 Ranger lineup with models specially designed for farmers and ranchers. Zach Johnson, known on social media as the Millennial Farmer, hosted the launch of the new UTVs. The new Ranger lineup is being shipped to dealers this month.
Farm Rescue is continuing its hay relief efforts in response to recent wildfires in Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Texas. Anheuser-Busch Foundation has donated $15,000 to support the transportation and delivery of livestock feed. Farm Rescue is coordinating donated hay from surrounding states, which is being distributed on a first-come, first-served basis. Farm Rescue is calling for volunteer CDL drivers and hay donations in closer proximity to the impacted areas. Monetary gifts to help support the campaign are also being called for. Farm Rescue says Operation Haylift will continue through the next several months as funding and resources follow.
The American Farm Bureau Federation has opened applications for the Ag Innovation Challenge this week. This year, the prize for the winner will double to $100,000. The contest is open to any ag startup with an innovative business plan or product that helps meet challenges facing America's farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. The applications will close June 15th and can be found under the initiative tab at fb.org. Reporting Agriculture's Business, this is the Red River Farm Network.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. With planting getting started in a few areas, AsGrow DeKalb technical agronomist Grant Mehring says there are some early planting considerations to think about.
You need to understand your risk. And one of the risks is your crop insurance date. And so we need to know that. But now what I'm going to talk about after that is just the considerations regarding these two crops in early planting. So more of the point of my talk was going to be corn, but let's talk about wheat quickly, because there is wheat that's going to be going in the ground yesterday, today, and all through the weekend. Wheat is a cold season grass, cool season grass. Wheat can germinate when your soil temps are 34 degrees at the coldest time of the day, and wheat likes to be planted early. You'll get more seed around, you'll get higher yields, and just generally speaking, it likes the cool weather. There is really very little problem with planting wheat right now.
Mehring says getting the corn germinated and out of the ground as quickly as possible should be the goal.
Getting enough heat units to emerge that corn, which is roughly 120 accumulated corn heat units, in under 2 weeks. That's a really moderately low-risk situation. Low risk. There are higher risks as you allow that or force that seed to emerge and germinate slower. If you're up to 3 weeks or 4 weeks, it's just higher stress. And you could possibly think about losing some stand because of that. You can have things such as cold shock, where you're warm and then cold. You can have cold immovational chilling, where that seed gets a cold drink of water. And so you need to monitor your stimulated heat units as well as the weather that's upcoming, the rains that are upcoming.
The latest U.S. drought monitor shows drought coverage across the U.S. is at its lowest since spring of 2020. Recent rain and snow during the past few weeks continued to ease drought conditions across the upper Midwest. Drought continues to develop or intensify across parts of the southern Great Plains and lower Ohio Valley. The High Plains saw a one-category improvement across parts of Wyoming and western South Dakota. Abnormal dryness was reduced throughout the Dakotas.
While water levels are higher now than this time last year, the Mississippi River could still see issues if drought expands across the Midwest. Soy Transportation Coalition Executive Director Mike Steenhook explains.
We have seen water levels rebound considerably since the fall of last year when water levels were at historically low levels. But when you look at water levels as they currently are compared to the spectrum where they normally would be at this time of the year, we are at the lower end of that spectrum. And so what that tells us is that it wouldn't take a considerable period of dry weather, particularly when you also take into consideration that so much of farm ground in the Midwest and in the Plain States continues to be in drought condition.
Steenhoek says maintaining levels on the Mississippi is a key to our competitiveness in the world market.
It wouldn't take much for these water levels on the river to get back to historically low levels, which would impede barge transportation. So that's something we're obviously going to keep monitoring as the weeks and the months progress. We want precipitation, A, to replenish farm ground so that farmers can grow their crops more efficiently and robustly. But we also want precipitation to help support navigation on our inland waterway system, which is one of the secrets to our competitive success in the global marketplace, having that efficient maritime highway called the Mississippi River and the other rivers that feed into it.
USDA's weekly export sales report shows corn export sales for the week ending April 4th at a marketing year low, with combined old and new crop sales of 335,000 metric tons. That is 65% less than the previous week and 72% less than the four-week average. Soybean sales of 305,000 metric tons are 57% more than the previous week, but 20% less than the four-week average. There were no new crop soybean sales. Combined old and new crop wheat sales of 355,000 tons are 27% more than the previous week and 21% more than the four-week average.
U.S. Class 1 railroads originated 24,800 grain carloads during the week ending March 30th. That is down 1% from the previous week, but 12% more than a year ago. The average shuttle secondary rail car bids and offers were $69 above tariff, $269 less than the previous week, but $280 more than last year. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture. Let's catch up with Ag Week editor Jenny Schlecht. Jenny, what's on the cover of Ag Week this week?
Well, this week, Ann Bailey, our longtime reporter who has now moved into retirement, wrote her last cover story for us on the prospective plantings report. And what she looked at was not only what is predicted for our region as far as planting, but kind of some ways that those numbers are pretty squishy, the ways that they can change and why, and where we're sitting as far as what the forecast is for this region.
I think most of the time, too, the weather probably will play a bigger role in determining those acres, at least the final acreage anyway.
Right. It's really hard in March to know when am I going to be in the field? Can I make these risk management deadlines? Is this the best conditions for whatever crop I was thinking of? And you know, the markets play a part, and probably availability of inputs and a lot of other factors. It's just really hard to say that this is a for sure thing, what USDA puts out at the end of March.
Does she get into kind of a breakdown of what crops expected to get put in?
Right, yes. So, you know, this year we're looking at less corn, more soybeans, especially up here in the north. North Dakota has a huge soybean increase expected. And then also more wheat in the U.S., and then she also looks at things like barley, which is way down, which was predicted, and sunflowers. And dry beans are expected to be up quite a lot, which is a small market, but North Dakota and Minnesota are pretty huge in it. So that's something to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Well, sounds interesting. Looking forward to reading about it next week's Ag Week.
Minneapolis May wheat trading 4¾ cents higher at 641¾. Chicago wheat 3 cents higher at 554¾. Kansas City 5 cents higher at 588¼. May corn futures 6 higher at 434¾. July corn 5½ higher at 446½. December corn 4½ higher. Soybeans May futures 11 cents higher at 1170¼. August 8¾ higher at 1180¼. Feeder cattle, April down $1.67 at $237.47. April lean hogs down 57 cents. This is the Red River Farm Network.